You're tuned in to 411 Teen. 411 Teen is a weekly program for teens and other interested folks. 411 Teen provides a forum to examine and discuss various issues and events that confront, intersect, and sometimes interrupt our daily lives. I'm Dr. Liz Hollyfield. 1 in 285 children in the U.S. will be diagnosed with some form of cancer before the age of 20. Carly Friels was a typical high school junior, an accomplished athlete, looking forward to her senior year. At 17 years of age, she was diagnosed with Hodgkin's lymphoma. Suddenly, her world came tumbling down. In her recent book, When Faith is Greater Than Fear, Carly offers hope and insight to young folks who are battling cancer. It provides a real-life advice and provides support to give one the strength to cope with the diagnosis of cancer. Carly, welcome to 411 Teen.
Hi, thank you so much for having me.
Well, thank you for sharing with us. I want to applaud you on your book. I found it very informative. It was helpful. I thought it was well done and very thoughtful. Now, cancer affects young children and adolescents in different ways than it affects adults. What was your impetus for writing this book?
Almost everyone is affected by cancer, either directly or indirectly at some point in their lives. But I felt like all the tragedies were where the spotlight was and all the sad stories about cancer. So I wanted to write a positive outlook on it from a youth's point of view rather than adult cancer.
Okay.
Just to get my story out there.
And it's a powerful story. In writing your book, who were your target readers?
Really just any youth patient going through cancer or their families. Every member of my family wrote a chapter in the book, so mm-hmm. It's from everyone's perspective rather than just my own.
Yeah, I noticed that. I thought that was a very interesting aspect
Thank
to
you.
Your book. When did you start writing the book? How long did it take? I mean, at what point, you know, when you were going through this diagnosis treatment, did you decide to write this book?
Right. So I kept a journal throughout my whole treatment, just about my thoughts and my day-to-day life as I was going through chemotherapy. But it wasn't until about 2 years after that I decided to expand on those journal entries and make it into an actual book. But once I started writing, it only took about 3 months to get it all written.
Can you share just how the diagnosis of your cancer evolved? I mean, for example, when you went to, were you experiencing any particular difficulties? Were you having any problems? What sent you to the doctor?
Yeah, so I didn't feel sick and I didn't notice any mm-hmm. symptoms until one day I was at a volleyball tournament and my dad called me over and noticed some lumps on my neck.
Oh, okay.
But it was completely out of the blue. I had been very healthy and active up to that point. And so when we went back to Houston, which is where I'm from, I was out of town for a volleyball tournament. We just got a biopsy done and some test results and were told that it was Hodgkin's lymphoma.
Well, coping with a chronic illness is stressful, especially when one hears cancer. That puts a whole different twist on things. Would you agree?
Yes, ma'am. It's definitely a daunting word to hear.
What did you think? What went through your mind when you received this diagnosis?
When I was first told that it was cancer, my first question was actually if I could continue playing volleyball,
okay.
Which I know seems kind of naive, I guess.
No, that was important.
Right. So that was, since I was a 17-year-old girl, volleyball was the biggest thing in my life, honestly, at that point. So the doctor said no, but that's really all I focused on for a while.
Uh-huh.
And then a few days later, probably it hit what that really meant my life was going to look like for the next few months.
Mm-hmm.
And then it all started to sink in. But I think I was just really caught off guard at first, and all I could think about was the fact that I was going to be out of volleyball for a while.
Mm-hmm. Well, that is to be understood. How was the information conveyed to you?
So like I said, I got the biopsy, and then 2 weeks later, they called us back for results. So my parents and I just went into the doctor's office, okay. And he sat us down and told me that it was in the late stages of stage 2 Hodgkin's lymphoma. Mm-hmm. And after that, it's all kind of a blur what the rest of the conversation looked like, but I know he had a conversation with my parents about getting signed up for MD Anderson in Houston and mm-hmm. how to go about starting the chemo process.
Okay, so what was the general attitude? I mean, I guess it was you and your parents that were informed. How did they respond to it? How did the general family members, your parents, respond to it?
At first, we were all very in shock. So, mm-hmm. We were all crying at first in the waiting room or in the doctor's office, mm-hmm. but just because we had no reason to think that it would be cancer. Like I said, I had been very healthy and we didn't have any other symptoms other than the random bumps on my neck.
Mm-hmm.
So we were all in shock at first, but starting day one at MD Anderson, my whole family was very positive and always uplifting and tried to focus on the victories, no matter how small at the time.
How did this condition impact your daily lives? I mean, what type of changes did you experience?
Probably the biggest change, especially for being in high school, like I said, was I wasn't going to school anymore, and mm-hmm. a lot of my friends didn't know how to handle the situation. So a lot of the relationships with my friends changed just because so many people don't know what to say, so they just don't mm-hmm. say anything, which was probably one of the hardest things. And then in addition, losing my hair, and I chose not to wear a wig just because to me it was really uncomfortable and I felt like I was hiding something mm-hmm. if I wore a wig.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So just walking around, going about my daily activities and having everybody know that I was battling cancer was a huge toll to take on, especially at a young age.
Yeah. Were there any physical limitations that were required or adaptations that, you know, were demanded by your condition?
Not necessarily. I definitely, because we didn't know what caused my cancer, mm-hmm. my mom became very particular in my diet and what I did and wanted to make sure that I was being very careful and not doing a lot of things that my friends were doing, like just running around outside or eating fast food.
Mm-hmm.
We definitely had to be more conscious of that. But once chemo started, it was just the basic effects of chemo where you feel a lot more tired.
But
and
before,
there were definitely days.
I was going to say, prior to the chemo, how were you feeling? Had you been feeling fatigued? Were you particularly, you had no indication that anything was going on?
There was a few days where my throat was starting to hurt, but I went to the doctor to see if there was anything, and the doctor just told me that nothing was going on and there was nothing to be concerned about. But I had asked for, like, strep throat medicine mm-hmm. or anything he could think of because I could feel it hurting a little bit, but they ran tests and said nothing was wrong.
Okay.
So not until the bumps appeared did we have any sign of it actually being anything.
Now, you mentioned that one of the changes that you recognized were the changes in your relationship with your friends. How did you handle that? Did you maintain those friends, or because those friends were uncomfortable, were you at a distance? I mean, how did that go?
Right. So there were definitely friends that distanced themselves because, mm-hmm. not because they didn't want to have anything to do with it, but because like I said, a lot of people just don't know what to say in situations like that. So I tried to maintain those relationships, but it was also not at the top of my priorities list of things to focus on. But then I also had friends that definitely stepped up and were there through every chemo and would lay in bed with me when I was feeling sick and bring me food and all that good stuff. So it was really a good chance to see who would step up in hard times and who backed down.
So it sounds like your friends played, you know, varied roles, and that some were extremely supportive and were there with you, and others who were concerned, just it was very awkward for them to talk about it.
Correct. Yes, ma'am. A lot of people just don't want to say the wrong thing, which is understandable. I don't know if I would know what to say either. We were all new to it.
Right.
But a lot of them just kind of fell back in the distance because they didn't know what to say.
What about young folks your age who may be listening to this, or their parents may be listening to this? Is there anything that you would suggest to them about friendships and the awkwardness that they may encounter with friendships and the diagnosis of cancer, how they may cope with it? Any suggestions or insights you may have?
Right. I think it's going to be different for every patient, just depending on their personality, but I wanted to handle it in a way where I didn't want anything to change, and I didn't want any of my friends to feel uncomfortable around me. So the friends that stayed around and just let me know that they were going to be there if they needed me or if I needed them, and didn't treat me any differently, but let me know that they were there to support as well.
Okay.
Those are the friends that kept the most impact during that time.
Okay. And you were able to maintain communication and feel comfortable with them through all of this?
Correct. Okay. Yes, ma'am. I still tried to go to as many events with my peers as I could so that I still felt like a normal high school girl rather than just a cancer patient. But there were days where I wasn't able to do that as well.
You're tuned in to 411 Teen. This hour, I'm talking with Carly Fields. Carly was diagnosed with Hodgkin's lymphoma at 17 years of age. We're going to take a brief break, but we'll return shortly. Estimated 69,212 adolescents and young adults ages 15 to 39 were diagnosed with cancer in 2011. This is about six times the number of cases diagnosed in children 0 to 14, as reported by the National Cancer Institute. Carly Friels joins us this hour, and she's talking about her struggle with cancer at 17 years of age. Carly, you said that you were able to maintain your schoolwork. How was that accomplished?
Yeah, so I, the timing of my cancer, I guess you could say honestly, kind of worked out. It was right towards the end of the school year. So there was only about a month left before summer. So it was all about communicating with my teachers, and I went to a very understanding school where they knew my situation and helped me out in any way that they could to make sure that I finished the year off right.
Well, as you say that, what kind of advice or suggestions would you offer to the school, to the teachers, to the coaches who may be involved and have a student who has been diagnosed with cancer? How can they best, when you think about it, you've been through it, how can they best benefit them?
Well, I had teachers of all kinds. I had some teachers that were very understanding and worked with me and my schedule to just be very flexible on when things were due and the quality, I guess, that I turned them in. And they they just wanted it done and were understanding of my condition.
Mm-hmm.
And those are the teachers that I really appreciated during this time. But then I also had the teachers that would say that no excuse was good enough, and if I had a test that day, no matter what my condition, I needed to be there to take it. So,
how did you feel in response to that?
I kind of got defensive a little bit, mm-hmm. but I had been asking to be treated normal.
Okay.
And like any other student. So I guess that was just their response in treating me like any other student. So, and I knew who those teachers were, and I knew that that's how they were going to react. So I just followed their orders, and if it was possible, I was there to take the test.
Mm-hmm.
But it definitely made it a whole other thing for me to worry about during this time.
So what I'm saying, what I hear you saying is that teachers could be a little bit more receptive and sensitive,
yes.
to because you do have a major disease that you are having, you're being confronted with. So
right.
The attitude of, well, I don't care what the excuse is, may not be the best way to go.
Right. Right. I definitely couldn't fire back with a sassy remark when I was told that. But I would say if you are a teacher and you have a student in this condition, to try to be as sensitive as you can,
mm-hmm.
and work with them rather than tell them that no excuse is good enough, regardless if they have cancer or not.
Lots of times, and I have one student that I know who has been diagnosed with Hodgkin lymphoma. But lots of times, the student or the patient who has been diagnosed may feel guilty or responsible. Did you experience any of that?
I wouldn't say guilty, no, especially because we had no idea what caused mine. And still to this day, we're not sure if it was something that I could have prevented.
Mm-hmm.
But I guess when it came to doing things like schoolwork and stuff like that, I felt responsible to still get it done and not use my condition as a crutch to get me out of things.
You briefly talked about the diagnosis, but for those listening, would you share just the steps that were involved? Because I think for some, just hearing the word cancer, but then going, not knowing what to anticipate, if you could share the diagnostic process, I think that would be very helpful.
Right. So, like I said, I was diagnosed when I was 17, and that just started with first seeing the bumps and then getting a biopsy for it. And then after discussing with my doctor, he decided that it would be best for me to go to MD Anderson in Houston. And luckily we got in a few days later, which is a huge blessing.
How long did it take?
Do you
mind sharing the time? I mean, from the biopsy to the results, how long did that take?
It took 2 weeks for the results.
So
those 2 weeks we were just waiting, and honestly had never even thought that it could be cancer.
Okay.
Because I had been so healthy, but it took 2 weeks to get those results.
Okay. Share with us, as much as you are willing, about Hodgkin's lymphoma. What is it? I know it's one of the more common cancers of adolescents.
Yes, ma'am. It's typically very common in youth patients. And mine was in my neck and my chest.
Okay.
So it was just a chain of them, starting at my neck, which is the ones we could see, but then there were hidden ones going through my chest as well.
Mm-hmm.
And non-Hodgkin's is harder to cure because it's sporadic, and you can have a tumor in your neck and a tumor in your leg, and they just kind of jump around, where Hodgkin's stays together and grows in that way.
For the listening audience, Hodgkin's is a cancer that affects the lymphatic system. And this is part of the immune system. And what happens is, and you correct me if I'm wrong, Carly, is the cells in the lymphatic system just start growing abnormally, and they may spread, as you said, it was in your neck and chest. They may spread and metastasize. And what happens is, as these cells grow, they compromise the body's ability to fight infection.
Correct.
Right.
Yes.
Okay.
Once those start growing, you have to be a lot more careful of your surroundings, I guess, and
mm-hmm.
you're much more prone to any sort of infection.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And with treatment, one can have a full recovery, and prognosis is good. The type of treatment one receives is based on the type of cancer one has and how advanced the cancer is or what stage it is in. And I think you mentioned yours was in stage two, right?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay. What other treatment was involved? I mean, did you have radiation? Did you have chemotherapy? You know, take us through all of that once you got down to the center, cancer center.
Right. So I started chemo in May and of 2012.
Okay.
And I met with my team and they ran a bunch of scans and tests and blood work.
And who was your team? Can you share who was on the team?
Right. So the only one that I ever had communication with or mm-hmm. interactions with was my main doctor in
okay.
pediatrics. But she had a team with her of about 10 to 15 people
mm-hmm.
that would all look at my symptoms, look at my scans, and together come up with the best chemo routine that they thought was best fitting to my specific cancer.
Okay. Now, what did chemo involve?
So the chemo they chose for me was 8 rounds, and each round was 3 days.
Okay.
So the first day, I would go in, and they would hook up a bag of the liquid chemo to my IV.
Mm-hmm.
And I would just sit there for the first day was 10 hours.
Okay.
And the chemo would just go into my bloodstream. And for 10 hours, I would just sit there. And sometimes it made me sick. Sometimes I felt fine during it. And fill that time with playing board games or reading books or doing anything to keep my mind occupied.
Okay. Now, the second day, was that still?
The second day was the same process, but only 8 hours.
8 hours. Okay. And then the third day?
Third was 6 hours.
Okay. Now, you said you had 8 rounds of this. Was it the same amount of time with each round, or did it lessen?
No, it was the same with each round. So every round was the 3 days
mm-hmm.
of the same time.
Okay. And how were you feeling in between the rounds?
So I'd have a few days to recover in between rounds, but those days you typically feel pretty fatigued.
Okay.
Sometimes you're actually sick. And it got, the first round was okay in between, and then it gets harder as the rounds go on. At least for me, it could be different for each patient.
Mm-hmm, but of course.
For me, it got more difficult to recover in between each round.
Okay, so round one was okay, but by the time you got to about six, it was much more difficult. So it sounds
right.
like basically you were out of action for those 8 rounds.
Correct. Yes,
okay.
Ma'am.
All right. So you weren't going to school. That's what I'm trying to get a picture of your typical day. You weren't going to school. You weren't running and hanging out at the mall or anything. You were kind of, I guess, locked, housebound, so to speak.
Right. After the first round, I still went to school.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
In between my first and second.
Okay.
Because my immune system hadn't really started to go yet, and I wasn't losing my muscle, but as chemos went on, I became much weaker. But luckily, school had gotten out by that point.
Okay, okay.
So I didn't feel as if I was missing out on that much, I guess. But so, yeah, once my muscles started to go and I started to lose my hair, I didn't want to go to school anymore.
Okay. So you had to leave. Were you home? I mean, would you go to Houston, I guess, for 3 days and then come back home? Or how did you handle that aspect of it?
Well, luckily I'm from Houston.
Okay,
so
I see.
I was in the same city as MD Anderson, which was
okay.
A huge blessing in the fact that I didn't have to travel.
Okay, so that made that part easy.
Yes, ma'am.
As it could be. When you think about the treatment, what would you say to individuals who are getting ready to start or who may be experiencing chemotherapy now? What was the most difficult aspect of your treatment?
Probably the fact that I was losing my hair during it was really hard for me to accept. But as far as actually the chemo goes, the days where I would go in and have things to do during chemo were a lot more bearable because you're not just sitting there thinking about your disease and your treatments and everything that's wrong about it. You're mm-hmm. still focusing on fun activities you can be doing during chemo.
Now, are you in a room by yourself or is there someone else, another patient in the room, have conversation going on?
It depends on what hospital you're in, but I always had a room by myself, but I could have visitors and family and whoever I wanted in the room with me.
Okay, so folks could come and hang out with you while you were going through your chemo.
Right, yeah, I'd typically have friends come in and we'd just talk and hang out while I was getting chemo.
Okay. Did you experience any profound loss or fear or bewilderment as you were going through chemo?
Not particularly, no, ma'am. I stayed pretty positive throughout the whole thing. I think if you let your mind wander and focus on the negatives and the losses that could happen through it, it's a lot harder to come out of.
Mm-hmm.
Versus if you focus on that there's a possibility that you'll be okay and you're in good hands with the doctors and you have your support group around you, it makes the whole process a lot easier.
Now, did you participate in any formalized support groups or formalized intervention that may have been helpful? I mean, did you go to groups? Did you have a counselor? What did you do that aided in your coping with this challenge?
So I know there's a lot of groups that hospitals put together for
mm-hmm.
things like that.
Mm-hmm.
But I was in the pediatric center because of my age, but I was 18, so I was still way above every other patient
mm-hmm.
in the same vicinity of the hospital. But
right.
My volleyball coach at the time actually was also going through chemo. So we kind of used each other as support and would talk about it when we felt like other people wouldn't understand. We would talk to each other about what we were going through and we'd go to each other's chemos and be each other's support in that. So she was a huge,
mm-hmm.
huge influence to me during that time.
Where did you get your information about cancer? And I ask that, you know, again, for the listening audience, what did you find the most educational, the easiest, most to comprehend? Can you share that?
Right. I'm not sure that I ever really did a lot of research on it, actually. My doctor has always told me not to go research my symptoms or
mm-hmm.
my disease because a lot of times, I mean, the internet has a lot of great information as well if you want to know, but they always said if you have any questions or concerns or want to know more about your disease, to talk directly to your doctor rather than web surfing on the internet.
Mm-hmm.
Because you'll find so many things that might not apply to your condition specifically that could freak you out or make you think that something else is going on.
And that was easy for you to do? You know, I think in this day and age when we are so connected that it would seem like it's almost impossible for not just to look up a little bit. So,
<Yeah.
laughs> you know what I mean?
Yeah, I think my mom probably did just because she's being a mom. So mm-hmm. I know that she went on and searched Hodgkin's lymphoma and mm-hmm. a ton of articles about it. But I think I looked at it as a way of, I have it. I can't do anything about it right now. It's up to the doctors. So I kind of just took it as it is and knew that, honestly, there's nothing I could do about it.
Wow, that's fantastic that you were able to have that kind of control.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, I knew that it was out of my hands. So freaking myself out about it more wouldn't do any good.
Mm-hmm. But even if it wouldn't be freaking, just finding, you know, today, everybody goes to the net for everything, right?
Right. Just to be informed on it.
Right.
Yeah.
Just to be informed. And the fact that you were able to, you know, restrain yourself and not do that, that's great.
Right. Like I said, that my doctors were extremely, obviously, knowledgeable about mm-hmm. the condition. And because that they had studied my specific cancer so much that any questions I did have, they were more than willing to answer for me.
Okay. You're tuned in to 411 Teen, and we're talking about coping with cancer, the diagnosis and treatment, and adolescence. We're going to take a brief break, but we'll get right back at you. If you're just tuning in, the program is 411 Teen. I'm Dr. Liz Holyfield, and joining me is Carly Friels. Carly was diagnosed with Hodgkin's lymphoma when she was 17 years of age, and suddenly her world came tumbling down. Her recent book, When Faith is Greater Than Fear, offers hope and insight to young folks who are battling cancer. Challenges faced by adolescents 15 to 19, diagnosed with cancer, can complicate their treatment. Often they are unlikely to run into other patients their own age. Often they feel out of place. Carly, did you resent missing out on school and social events and spending time with your friends? And I know you're a big volleyball player, right?
Yes, ma'am.
Yeah. How did you handle that? How did you cope with that?
It was definitely hard at first to accept the fact that I was going to have a different junior and senior year of high school mm-hmm. than the rest of my friends, or than I had thought it would be. But like I said, I had so much support around me that the friendships that mattered didn't go away. They just changed their role a little bit in my life. But mm-hmm. as far as participating in volleyball or events or things going on, that was definitely hard for me to not have the opportunity to go to, I guess.
And that was also the time when you would be applying to college and getting ready to take that big leap. How did you handle that? What did you do? Did you continue to go on apply and then hope that maybe later you could go, or you postpone your admission, or what did you do?
I went ahead and just applied to everywhere that I wanted to go, and hoped that by the time acceptance letters came out, I would be cured. I always knew in the back of my mind that it was a possibility that I'd have to postpone it or decline an exception, but I still wanted to go ahead and, I guess, pretend that that wasn't the situation
mm-hmm.
and go ahead and apply to all of my dream schools.
Okay. Did you feel that having cancer created a stigma? Did you feel, because sometimes I know the one person that I know, a young person I know, who was diagnosed with cancer talked about feeling like there was a stigma against her. She was because she had this cancer and she couldn't, you couldn't hide it. I mean, she too lost her hair and was lost a lot of weight. And it was obvious mm-hmm. that something was wrong. If you didn't know what was wrong, it was something was going on.
Right. Yeah, I mean, it's definitely something that you can't really hide from the rest of the world, especially, like I said, I chose not to wear a wig.
Mm-hmm.
So that was a huge red flag anywhere I went. But I also tend to cope with things and with humor. So I'd make a lot of bald jokes or just make mm-hmm. light of the situation so that people wouldn't feel uncomfortable or feel like they couldn't say something or talk to me. So around my friends, I tried to keep it very light-hearted and not really make it as serious of a situation as an outsider would think it would be.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, being confronted with this type of devastating news is very difficult. And I know there are a number of different avenues that one may pursue when it comes to coping. And I'd like to focus some time on coping and the kinds of things that you used in coping. Now, I know religion is very significant for a number of folks in the formation of attitudes. What role did religion play in your coping with cancer?
Right. So I grew up in a very religious family, and all of our friends and people we surround ourselves with are also strong believers as well. So mm-hmm. I know that that played a huge role in keeping a positive mindset through this whole thing. And again, like I said earlier, knowing that it wasn't in my hands, it was not only in the doctor's hands, but in the Lord's hands. So it wasn't my thing to fix, but that definitely kept us positive throughout the whole thing. And we relied on our faith a lot.
So what you're saying to me is that religion played a very significant role in, for you and your family, is what I hear you saying, as far as
yes,
coping with this challenge that you were confronted with.
Right. We had always been a religious family in the aspect that we went to church and prayed, but
mm-hmm.
Having something as big as cancer to hit your family made you kind of reevaluate that and learn how to, like, trust in the Lord rather than just say you're a believer.
Mm-hmm. So it sounds like you took it to another level, so to speak.
Exactly.
Okay. In addition to religion, were there any other aspects of coping that you found to be helpful? I mean, did you have any type of relaxation techniques? Did music play a role? You know, I'm just thinking because coping is very important. As you said, it's not going to go away. You've got the cancer, so you might as
right.
well have try to establish and maintain a positive attitude or as much, positivity as you possibly could. And so that's why I'm asking all this, just for those who may be listening, for parents, you know, what can parents do? What can they say? What can they stop doing? Sometimes, you know, feeling that you're being micromanaged, so to speak.
yeah.
You know, so, and that's what I want to get, really down to in these last, we've got a few minutes left in the program, because I think parents and loved ones and friends, when they find that someone important is confronted with cancer, you know, we don't know what to do. And that's something you've mentioned. A lot of times we feel uncomfortable and don't know what to say. So if you can share any type of insight that may be helpful with parents, what they can do and what they should not do, because they don't know. It's all a learning process
mm-hmm.
for them,
it's
too. And they are
right.
just as stressed out as their child. You know, and that parent always has that feeling that they want to be able to protect. and take care of their child, no matter how old they are, if they're 17 or if they're 7 months. So can you share some information that you might with parents?
Right. So like I said, it's going to be different for every family.
Mm-hmm, of course.
But, speaking on how it was in my experience, my family was very supportive through the whole thing, but some things that made a difference were, like anything that we'd have to do medically, we mm-hmm. didn't do in my room. We did in another room in the house because they still wanted my room to be a place that I could go to and
okay.
have good feelings about it and not feel stressed out. So we made like a little relaxation room in the house, I guess,
mm-hmm.
that anytime I needed meds or shots or my IV changed, things like that was in a whole different part of the house.
Okay, that could be very helpful, all right?
Right, because you want to keep the rest of your house positive and filled with all mm-hmm. the rest of your memories you've had in those rooms
mm-hmm.
versus this is where I get all my shots.
Right.
Okay. So that was a huge thing. And even if we'd play spa music or have the lights dimmed or things to make it more relaxing while you're in
mm-hmm.
there, is very helpful.
Okay.
And then as far as things to do or not to do, like I said, I wanted to still be treated normal, but also know that I had the support if I needed it.
Mm-hmm.
So my parents, even if it was hard for them to do at first, I wanted them to still just treat me like a normal 17-year-old girl and still joke around with me, have fun, just mm-hmm. the way our family always had been. But then if I was struggling or starting to feel fatigue from the chemo or something, I knew that they would be right there if I needed them to do something. So, and it goes the same with your friends. A lot of my parents' friends wanted to help in any way they could, so a lot of times I was just doing things like making us meals because we have enough on our plate to have to deal with.
Mm-hmm.
But, so helping out in little ways, but also not treating the patient differently or always just looking at them like they're sick or talking to them like they're incapable,
mm-hmm.
which I think people have good intentions when they do, but
well,
that only makes the patient feel more isolated.
I was going to say, we know about good intentions. you
yeah.
know, where they can lead.
You know they mean well.
They mean well.
It really helps. Yeah.
But, yeah.
Exactly.
Were there interventions that your parents used in coping? I know you said religion was very important, but I mean, for example, did they participate in any type of support groups, parents whose children have cancer? Do you know of anything that they found very beneficial in helping them to deal with this?
I know that they had a few meetings with, like, my pastor.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Which, like I said, goes back to the religion aspect of it. But, and my mom started a blog because so many people wanted to stay informed, but it was overwhelming for us to try to keep up with that. And it was just adding more pressure on us to call everybody after every chemo or do all that. So she started a blog to, I guess, help just keep everybody who wanted to help informed.
Mm-hmm.
But I think only my dad really did any intervention groups or met with parents of other patients and wanted to talk about things that worked, things that didn't work, and he loved that.
Mm-hmm.
So my mom was more keeping to herself about it.
And you were saying, I mean, different strokes for different folks. It really depends
exactly.
on the individual. You know, what might work for one may not work for another, but there may be a plethora of various options out there, and it sounds like it just depends on the individual as to what they select.
Exactly. There's definitely resources out there for people who want to have those connections
mm-hmm.
and be very verbal about what they're going through, but we didn't take that route as much as it was offered to us.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Although completion of treatment is something to celebrate, and I know you are cancer-free now, correct?
Yes, ma'am.
Yeah. It can still bring, I would think, new challenges. I mean, do you ever worry? Are you concerned about the return of cancer?
It's definitely something that you think about from time to time, but it's about just staying aware of what your body's doing. And if I have any symptoms or concerns, again, I'll just go to my doctor, and I still have to go every 6 months to MD Anderson. So it's reassuring that I have enough checkups that it's not something that I just don't know.
Did this experience change your relationship with yourself, with your body? I mean, do you find now that you're more in tune? You are more, you know, likely to check things out, be more scrutinizing?
Yes, ma'am. I definitely feel like I've realized now that I need to be more aware of what's going on. Even though I am young, you still have to really, I guess I'm more aware of if I'm taking care of my body or not, which everybody should be even before having to deal with something this big. But especially given my circumstances, I'm definitely more aware of what's going on.
Are there any other challenges that you encountered in coping with the cancer diagnosis that we have not discussed?
I think we've covered most of it. I mean, it's going to be different, like I said, for every person. But the biggest things for me were just relying on my support group and my faith to get me through everything.
As you look at the culture today, do you think the culture is obsessed with youth and perfection? Did that enter into your attitude at all about having cancer, being diagnosed and treated for cancer?
Yeah, I think definitely with the way social media is today, every picture is edited, everybody looks perfect. It's all about perfection all the time. So that was also hard because that pressure is on a high school girl enough. And then if you add in the fact that she's losing her hair, losing or gaining weight, all the other insecurities that come with it make it difficult as well. So during the time I lost my hair, I actually covered most of my mirror with Bible verses and quotes about beauty, and just to remind myself that no matter what I look like at the moment, like, you're still beautiful, and it's not about being perfect and looking like the girls in the magazines. So finding ways to help yourself and remind yourself that social media is not reality.
Okay. Where can one get your book?
So you can buy my book on Amazon.com or Barnes & Noble online.
Okay.
Or my website is winfaithfear.com.
Okay. You want to say that again one more time?
Winfaithfear.com.
Okay. In this last couple of minutes, there appears to be, and I've wanted to ask you this, an indifference, a general overall indifference to people or to sensitivity. Do you think that this is an accurate description of today's general attitude toward illness? That, you know,
being sensitive,
that they are insensitive. They're not, you know, they're indifferent to that.
Yeah, I guess it just depends. A lot of people are, especially in today's society, very caught up in their own lives and what's going on with them. But depending on who you surround yourself with, I mean, my group was very sensitive to the fact that I was going through a hard time and wanted to drop what they were doing and help me. So I wouldn't say that it's an overall societal issue, but it's definitely probably more prominent than it had been in years prior.
In this last minute, are there any positive outcomes from this stressful, demanding situation?
Yeah, I mean, I would say a lot of things. Like I said, we all grew in our faith, and my family is closer than ever. And even if I lost some friends in the process, I found the ones that really would be there for me and cared for me through all of this. So even though it was a hard way to get there, a lot of great things in my life have happened because of it.
Well, Carly, I just would like to say thanks so much for sharing your experience with us here on 411 Teen. And to my listening audience, that's it for this hour. Tune in next week, same time, same place, to get the 411 on 411 Teen. This edition of 411 Teen was produced by Dr. Liz Hollyfield. Technical assistant, Ken Smith. Audio copies are available, and if you want to participate in 411 Teen or have suggestions for discussion topics, call 1-800-829-8809, extension 358. If you would like to subscribe to 411 Teen podcast, log in wfsu.org. Check us out on Facebook.